The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of So What Do You Really Do? The podcast where I, your host, Deader Dennis Maller, talks to artists and entertainers about their day jobs. And y'all, it's hot. If you can hear the fan going in the background, I do not care. It is hot in the studio. It is hot in Boston. It is hot in Baltimore, in D.C., in California, and all across the nation. I recorded a podcast today. Great episode with a wonderful guest that you're going to enjoy, I'm sure. Finished editing it, and I had to go out for a Slurpee break so I could just calm down. I am drenched in sweat. This intro is not going to be longer because I want to get done with this and get back upstairs to my air conditioner and sit face first in front of it, petting my dog, who also is incredibly too hot because she has a big, dumb, furry coat that sheds everywhere still, even though we've done two blowouts and desheddings already. But on the podcast today, instead of the complaining, let's get to the podcast so we can get to through this intro. On the podcast today is Talina Chimkemi. I knew what it was. Her and I went through it, tried to make sure I got it right, and I just talked too fast and ruined it. But that's okay. She's a very talented actress and musician from the band Bite Me Bambi, who I was introduced to because of, A, I'm a ska fan, and two, my friends 13 Towers, a ska band out of Washington, D.C., opened up for them. So I saw that show coming up, and then I saw that Bite Me Bambi was playing here in Boston, opening up for the Slackers and Big D and the Kids Table, so I was like, oh, and my other friends, the Scotch Bonnets. What's up, Pablo? I saw them all together. You know, I saw them on a show, and I was like, Talina is interesting. She's in a band. She was an actress. And we get into some of the other jobs that she has done in her life and her career as an entertainer. And I was like, let's do a podcast. By the way, that was October. It's been 9 months trying to follow through and get back to people. It's not everybody replies quickly, and I'm not always the best at following up on, hey, can I talk to you? I'll talk to you later. I'll get back to you on that. Yeah, I'm the worst. But we finally had our conversation. It was a great one. It was a good, fun time. They were actually in the studio. So, warning, there's music playing in the background during a lot of her talking. Can I filter it out? Probably. Was I going to go through the effort? No. All right. So, no, I did not go through the effort to do all that. So, deal with it. This is what it is. You're getting a sneak preview to the brand new EP, some of the songs on the brand new EP they're putting out. So there you go. It's an exclusive. It's a bug, it's a feature, not a bug. Okay. But no, it was a fun conversation, and she got opened up a lot of things that if you're a longtime listener on the podcast, you know that occasionally when I talk to women in the industry, I ask about what's it like to be a woman in the industry. And I don't want to have to ask these questions. I want to live in a world where women don't get treated differently than men, and men don't get treated differently than women. I want us to all be on the same level playing field, and I want people to be treated differently because they're assholes. That's why I want people to be treated differently. Not because of their sex, their gender, their skin color, or it's because the character or their lack of is I want people to be judged on. But it is a real thing that we have to live in this world, and it's a thing that I don't experience. You know, I've experienced prejudices in different ways, or maybe I've experienced, privilege in other different ways. And you know what? I'll talk about those with people too, who I think they have a platform and something that they want to say about it too. But I can definitely tell you, I don't know what it's like to, you know, be an attractive person and have to deal with that. And that's one of the things her and I talk about. And of course, we talk about, you know, the industry of acting and how many creepos there is in that. And some of that creepos follow them into the music industry, too, or they're just there as well. So that is a subject, I guess, trigger warning. We don't get really deep into anything, but, you know, it happens. We've talked about it. It's a good conversation. I enjoyed every moment of it. And then we get to talk about music. And we also talked about our anxieties when it comes to the almighty algorithm of the social media. Yeah, we talked about that too. More like vented. More like we had a therapy session about it. But we talked about that and a lot more. So enjoy my conversation with actress and singer from the band Bite Me Bambi, Talina Chimkemi. So are you guys recording a new single right now?
Yeah, two songs. We're working on an EP, so this is like the last two tracks for the upcoming EP. It might end up being a full length. I don't know yet. We're trying to figure it out. So, but it's the last two. And everyone will get off my back. No.
Well, that, I mean, that brings up an interesting question about the day and age that we're in with music production, how easy it is to get studio time, produce things. Is it worth even producing a full-length record anymore? Do you have to make that, when I started out in music in the 90s with my friends' bands and stuff, we put out EPs because they could only afford to record four songs. Right, and we had to go to a studio and somebody had to do it and it had to be a whole ordeal. I can make a record here in this podcast studio of my home in my rented apartment in Boston. I could put out a whole record. I mean, fucking Billie Eilish and her brother did an entire record in their bedroom. Like,
yeah. You know, it's funny that there's a lot of different schools of thought. And when we started, the almighty algorithm rewarded singles and albums identically. So we just put out singles all the time because you got the same bang for your buck out of a single that you did with a record. Right. And so we did.
And who's buying full-length records on Spotify?
Yeah, nobody buys music like that anymore. Luckily, people understand that now. So at live shows, people are very supportive in purchasing merch and stuff. But, you know, people just, you just listen on Spotify. But now it seems the algorithm may have shifted and it seems to reward longer albums or EPs. I could be totally off base. When I look at like people's monthly listenership or all-time streams versus where their singles, I also heard from fans that it's annoying that we just have like single, that they want to listen to like a full thing and it bothers them. So,
we could talk about the algorithm for days.
I hate how much I think about the algorithm all day, every day of my life.
Oh, it rules my life. Even as a comedian, especially as a comedian, because all I'm thinking is with the podcast, like the everything lives and dies by this algorithm now. And it's, there's no rhyme or reason. And what drives me even bonkers is not so much not getting my head be able to wrap around it. It's the people who claim that they have beaten it, and I'm like, no, you haven't.
No, because they change it. They change it every like 3 months, and then we all have to figure it out again.
Yeah, and but also there's the gurus who are always trying to sell you the time on like, this is how you do it, and it's like, I've seen so many social media experts that have like 1,200 followers. I'm like, if you crack the code, why don't you have any followers?
No,
why are
exactly.
you not a viral success?
Yeah, and like I said, they change it. So for a while, it was photo carousels, and we all made photo carousels on Instagram. Then it was reels, and then they were rewarding reels. And now they're not rewarding reels again as much, even though it pushed. Because I get like emails or things from them being like, make a reel, do this. Like it tries to tell me what it wants, or even sometimes will monetarily reward me for doing something that it wants me to do, and I do it. But yeah, my last reel, 5,000, that's pretty low for me. So I'm like, okay.
I blew up the other day on the network because I put out a reel of a promo for a pocket. And this is also not going to sell this conversation go well, but I pulled one out and 5 hours later I came back and had 10 views. Not 10 likes, 10 fucking views. How is that even possible?
That's the thing.
Only 10 people saw this promotional clip for a podcast episode?
No,
and meanwhile, the other one gets 400, 1,000, whatever. The numbers don't matter. And it's like, what did I do wrong to where you took away 400 fucking views and gave me 10? 10.
You know what the secret is? You have to do it in your bra. That's what I do.
Yes.
When I want to make sure something gets seen, I do it in a very tiny outfit. And I hate that the algorithm rewards it, but it's what it is. And I got to use what I got right now, man. So...
Well, all right. Well, there is also that factor of we'll get to like everything else. Let's have our bitch session about the algorithm.
I know. Sorry.
Let's
have lame.
Our emotional venting that we need to do about this, because that's a thing that you just said that I can't empathize with, or not empathize. I can't understand because it doesn't apply to me. Is the how much people are rewarded for conventionally attractiveness. And right now, this is coming from a guy who's currently trying not to curl in the fetal position and have a total meltdown now that the Haktua girl is going to be doing a comedy club tour as a comedian.
I don't know what she's going to do, but hey.
And look,
I'm sure she paid enough writers. She'll be fine.
Somebody, her new agents that are taking her from the Springs factories of Tennessee to LA are going to pay for enough writers to write some jokes for her. But so for you, you made humorous mention of the fact that obviously when you wear skimpier clothes, your videos do better. Are you comfortable with accepting that kind of knowledge for yourself? Like, I mean, if I was, I look like a bridge troll and I sound like a truck full of screaming babies crashing into a nitroglycerin factory. All right. All I got is my jokes. All right. I got nothing else. I don't know what it's like to be like, oh, people are only liking me because I'm attractive. Do you feel that you can never trust people, especially bridge troll guys at me that are like, hey, like, I can understand when we met at your show and I was like, hey, come on my podcast. It probably sounded like, hey, come on.
No. I'm pretty good at weeding out the people who are kind of not wanting to talk to me for the right reasons. But no, honestly, I grew up in the entertainment industry, and so I'm kind of used to it. If you ask my therapist, it's why I have so many people-pleasing tendencies that are a problem in my personal life. But yeah, I'm kind of used to it. And the way I see it is, like, as an artist, yes, I want to be taken seriously. Like, some person on Reddit put one time, like, do people actually like this band or do they just like, because this girl's hot? First off, thanks for saying I'm hot. But two, like, it fucked me up and, like, I think I can swear, right? Sorry, I didn't ask.
Swear away, please, go ahead.
It fucked me up and, like, then, like, it was all I could think about. I was so, like, God, is that what everybody thinks? And I have a feeling that that's kind of said about me a little bit, that I lean into that. But I'm like, look, if it gets my art out there, if it helps people find my band, I only do it to the level I'm comfortable at. Like, I have a lot of control. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I was younger and in acting and stuff, you have, like, way less control. But, like, right now, like, I don't have a record label or anything. Like, we just are doing our own thing. So I have a lot of control over how, you know, I want to present myself. So I do it to the level with which, like, I'm comfortable. And, yeah, the algorithm rewards it. Is it fucked up? Yes. Do I not wish that's how it was? Yes. But at the same time, like, I heard a theory that Taylor Swift put out 2 back-to-back albums because she's getting older and she knows people won't give a shit anymore. And, yeah, like, right now, if this is what I look like, then I'm just gonna roll with it.
What? You look great, Talina. Talina looks great. Come on.
Hi.
Taylor Swift, she looks great, too.
Cameron Webb, our producer, was the person who said that to me.
I've never said that. I don't know what you're talking about. Never would I talk shit about anyone.
Never.
How much longer are you going to do this?
How much longer are we going to be here? Checking. Sorry, we're in the middle of recording.
How much time can I have you for?
How much time?
Just asking.
No, well, that's vague. Like,
can I have an hour?
Can we go till 11:30?
So it'll be...
Sure. Do what you
yep,
can.
Okay.
Yeah. Do until you're done, and we're good.
Okay. Thank Perfect. You. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. These things happen. Also, I'm very good at editing because I have to have skills because I don't have the attractiveness that I need.
I saw him over here just like standing in the corner and I'm like, yeah, you know what I'm doing. I think they need me to record scratch vocals is what it is. Anyway, okay, sorry. Back to the topic at hand.
No, that's fine. Well, moving on from that, because I feel like you've expressed your opinion on it, that like, and I applaud you for being able to utilize that bad side of society to a point that we are comfortable with. Because I think there's a lot of people that unfortunately either don't understand what the comfortability is and they go too far and they regret it, or they just don't really, they're not self-aware enough and they have the, oh, everyone actually likes me. And it's not like, did you ever talk to somebody who you can clear, like you live in LA, of course you've met those vapid people, like, and I'm not going to say women only because there's plenty of dudes that are like, they think they're so interesting and thought-provoking. And it's only because people have given them attention because they're pretty and they want to fuck them.
Well, so I will say this.
You don't fall into that. You have a self-awareness.
I try, but also, like, at the same time, the internet is weird. And, like, sometimes...
Understatement of the decade.
Like, this is going to sound so strange and probably make me sound crazy, but, like, sometimes I'll literally be like, in my real life, I'll be like, do I like this or is it my brand that I think I like this and I am this person online and that, like, there's, like, a little bit of this kind of... Sometimes even I lose myself in it and I try to, like, ground myself and meditate and be like, okay, who am I? But it's, like, very, yeah, I don't know. It's strange.
Oh, hon, I can empathize with that so much. As someone who grew up in the 90s during the grunge era where we were predisposed to hate everything corporate, and right, I have that cynicism in me and I have to sometimes check myself when I'm like, oh, do I hate this thing because it's bad or do I hate it because it's popular and I'm being anti right
now? No, yeah.
And it's very confusing when you're somebody who also worked in pop radio for 15 years too. Like, I'm an old school punk, right? I came from grunge. I came from anti-establishment, but also at the same time, I'm playing Taylor Swift hits on the radio, you know, back in the day and hip hop stuff. And I had to learn to like put my opinions aside for certain things and my own stuff. And I became happier when I realized the day in music, I realized that no one will ever look at music the same way that I will. And that it is all subjective.
Yeah, and that's kind of beautiful in that way because, you know, you can curate now what you like and, you know, what. And then I had to let a lot of that go, too, because it's easy to, growing up, like, punk and stuff, being like, ah, fuck Taylor Swift. Number one, I've met her, and she's incredibly kind. Like, I met her on the set of a TV show I was on, and she had no reason to talk to me. And she came up to me and was like, oh, hi, I'm so sorry I didn't introduce myself. I'm Taylor. And she was so nice. So number one, she's nice. But two, like she's or her songwriting team or whoever, like they make interesting music and people love it. And it resonates with a lot of people. Or like Chapel Roan is like blowing up, like great for her. You know, just because something is pop, I feel like it's easy as a punker to be like, fuck that, fuck the establishment, whatever. But
and now that we're getting in our 40s, the amount of my old punk friends that come to me like, hey, I heard you on the pop station the other day. You did a really good job on the show, this and that, with the break. That was really fun. I was like, why are you listening to Hot 99.5? I was like, because I have kids now.
Yeah.
And that's what they listen to, like, in the car.
Good music's good music. And I learned something. And like, I listen to these pop records. They're popular for a reason. And when we do production, sometimes I'm like, oh, I like that in this Olivia Rodrigo song they did XYZ. Like, let's try. And it's made it into some of our music. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. Or like now that I'm DJing, like sometimes people come up to me and they're like, play this song. And I'm like, that song fucking sucks. But like, whatever. Like, you know, sometimes I have more creative control than others. But if it's like the pride party or whatever, you're like, okay, you want to hear fucking whatever the fuck? Sure. You know, I just put it on. It made people happy. I'm an entertainer. What can I say?
Yeah. All right. So let's start from the beginning of that. Cause you mentioned it earlier. I'm not sure. Did you grow up in LA?
So Orange County. I actually still am Orange County. I never went to L.A. because I hate it there. Sorry, L.A. but yeah, I grew up in Orange County and I started doing theater when I was like 9, at like children's theater. And I did that and I did like community theater and then I started doing professional theater. And then when I was 15, I got which is the worst time.
Before we talk about 15, where when you got into theater, was that what got you into theater age 9? Was it something where... Did we have tiger moms? Did you have parents that were already involved with theater?
No.
Is this just a thing you fell into? Because I started in theater too because I have the, what Kevin Pollak calls it, the hey, look at me disease.
I call it just being born a ham. I say the only gift God gave me was charisma. Everything else I had to learn how to do. I was always like that kid who was like, everyone sit down and like, watch me. I'm an only child. My parents are not in the entertainment industry. They were musicians. My dad like plays sax and my mom plays trumpet. They met in a Blues Brothers cover band in high school. My dad was like a mod. my dad's a mod. My mom grew.
Wait, hold on. I do have to ask about this. Sure. This just occurred to me. Your parents were in a Blues Brothers covers band, which is a band that played covers.
Yes. But
okay, I just wanted to make sure that we had that inception correct.
Yes. They're in high school. But so that's how they met. And then my dad is like a mod. So like all my ska influence and everything comes from my dad. My mom grew up kind of in North Carolina, kind of rural. So her music tastes are kind of more contemporary because she wasn't exposed to very much when she was younger. So like my mom's favorite band is Green Day. So like she's like she likes pop punk. Like My Chemical Romance is my mom's second favorite band. So like that's kind of how I grew up. But they weren't in the entertainment industry. So I think we got like a flyer at school to audition for like a youth theater and I wanted to do it, but I didn't know anything about it. And I remember I was sick and I had a fever the day of the audition. And my mom was like, if you break your fever, then you can go. And I did. And I went and they were like teaching the kids a dance or something. And I was like, I don't know. This is too much. I don't know what any of this is. And I freaked out and I didn't audition. And then we had some friends like at church or something and they did youth theater. And so then, cause I'm a control freak, they like explained to me what was going to happen and like helped me pick a song and get sheet music and like that you're going to teach you a dance and this is what you do. And so after that, I started auditioning. And yeah, so I did that when I was 9. And then when I was probably, I think like 10 or 11, I started doing like college theater, like when they needed kids, like Annie and stuff like that. And then, community theater around that time, and then professional theater after that, like Civic Light Operas and stuff, if that means anything to anybody. Regional theater, I guess, is what it's called.
I mean, your parents are musicians, so they come from a performing background. They come from an entertainment background. You're Orange County, which is right next to L.A. I don't know the actual geography, but Orange County's, what, a couple minutes away from L.A.?
Depending where you are, but like an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. So was there any thought of this as a child of, like, at what point did you realize, like, hey, I can be a professional actor?
Probably pretty early on. I got pretty obsessed with it. Like when I was really, when I was like 12, I became like so serious. And like, all I did was listen to musicals and I wanted to be on Broadway so badly. And I was just like, it was my whole life. And it was all I talked about and all I did, which is funny now, but yeah, I was so into it. So it was what I always wanted. I thought I'd like move to New York and like go to Juilliard and like all this stuff.
That's refreshing to hear, because I talked to a lot of people who, for the long, like, I'm like you, where at a young age, I knew that comedy and acting was a profession, it was a skill, it was a job that people went and did. I have a hard time remembering when I thought TV wasn't made up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I just know for my entire life that people made shows somehow, and that you can, this be a profession and a job, and you can get paid for it. And a lot of people even get into this field and don't even realize that you could get, you can make a living from it. It's very hard and difficult, but there's a lot of people that don't. So it's refreshing to know that somebody at your young age knew that this was the path that you wanted to take. So when did you start doing, cause I know you've done like Disney Channel and Glee and a couple of those things. What was the transition from community theater and college theater and doing these small little local kind of theatrical productions to making the leap to doing TV shows?
That was when I was 15, and a friend of a friend's kid had an agent. So they got me the opportunity to read for the agent. The agent signed me. I remember I read Hannah Montana Sides, the Hannah Montana script, but it didn't say Hannah Montana in it because they were so old. It was before Miley Cyrus was attached. Anyway, I read, she signed me on the spot. We didn't know much about it. Being 15 is the worst time to become a child actor. My mom had been approached when I was younger and she said no. I was like 2 or 3 and she was like, no, I don't want to do that. Or like, she needs to choose it on her own. I got very lucky that it was always really my choice. My parents like did not give two shits about it. In fact, they probably would have preferred I didn't do it because they sacrificed a lot. I found out as an adult that my parents went into debt paying for my voice lessons from this teacher. Yeah, like, my mom drove me everywhere, because when you're 15, like, you can't go alone, you know? So my mom drove me the hour, 2 hours in traffic to go to auditions, you know, 3, 4, or 5 times a week. And when you're a kid, all the auditions are after school, so you're driving in the worst rush hour traffic. And we'd drive up there together, and she'd practice lines with me and, you know, all this stuff. Like, it was just, my parents had to be so involved. Like, it was a really big sacrifice. My mom would take me to rehearsals for, like, these regional theater productions and sit in the car and like watch DVDs on a portable DVD player and like feed me dinner. Like, it was so much that my parents had to sacrifice. Like, and now I'm like the singer of a ska band. I'm like, so sorry. but they gave me so much, you know, dance lessons, all acting classes. They paid all this money for acting classes and private sessions and coaching. And it was just like nonstop. But yeah, so I did that. And then even when I was an adult, my mom still would ride with me sometimes because I was just not wanting to sit in traffic by myself. Like, and we'd go to happy hour when I was done or whatever, and then we'd drive home. But like, yeah, I did it until I was like 26, not to age myself, but I did it for a long time. And I was always very close. And I'd gotten to this point where I had like a really big agent and managers and testing for pilots and signing contracts and then not getting the job. And then my heart just like fell out of it. I just didn't like it anymore. And I remember telling my managers, like, I just need a break. I can't do it anymore. And they were like, that's fine. You're not booking because everyone says you look miserable when you show up. And everyone knows you hate it. And I was like, oh, sick. Well, if everybody sees it on me, then cool. And I just,
they saw the writing on your face.
Well, and I think back to like during that time period, I bombed so many good auditions. Like one for Shameless, I just totally, like, it was probably the worst audition I've ever done. And like people who knew me, because you know, you get to know the casting directors, and people who knew me and believed in me would be like, let's try that again. Like, because they just knew I was just bombing. And they were trying to save me. But yeah, music really became the focus for me because I could control, it was being me. You know, I mean, you're a different version of yourself, but it isn't always like, okay, now I'm a rape victim on Law and Order SVU and I'm being kidnapped. Like, it's just, it becomes like so much that I just didn't like it anymore. And you could never take a vacation, which is funny because I never take vacations now. I just go on tour. But it used to piss me off that you could never go on vacation.
I lost my job in radio in 2018 and I foolishly went, this is a sign that I should be a full-time entertainer. And I didn't get a job and I dived full-time into acting, which how much full-time acting can you do here in Massachusetts, even as a member of SAG? Not a lot. And I, you know, doubled down or I put, you know, did comedy more and I did some freelance podcast working and recording and audio and sound and working with bands and stuff. And I was like, this is how I'm going to put my living together. This is a sign. It was not a sign. It was, and it is like, I got through that year and a half because of different things popping up and supporting me financially. Like I went from, I got fired in August, from August to Thanksgiving. I was nonstop booking background work for movies and TV here in New England, which is most of what the work is, which is fine. It's good pay. And you know what? It's the easiest.
When you're SAG, it's, the rules good, to background it's great acting. Pay if you're SAG in background. Yeah. Shit. They gotta have, they have to have a certain amount of you anyway.
And it's the easiest job. To be a background actor, all you gotta do is stand where they tell you to, don't look at the camera, and don't fall down unless they tell you to. That's it. That's it. It's easy. And you get 2 free meals a day. I loved it. It was great. But I went and took a week to Disney World to go spend time with my family who planned this trip ahead of time without me. I was like, well, I've got this big severance package. Let me go. And the week I'm in Orlando, it's nonstop. Hey, we want you for this. Hey, we want you for this. Hey, and I got to turn all of it down. It's like, I can't even leave for a week. But then as soon as Thanksgiving hits, boom, all the work stops until April. There is not a single casting from Thanksgiving to April. And throughout April and summer of that 2019, one production was in town, Smilf. And it was terrible trying to get work. So it's like, thank God my writing picked up and my writing was able to support you. And then thank God a couple months later, I booked a bunch of recording gigs as a recordist, you know, and producer for podcasts. So that, and I could just never get anything. I couldn't get everything to work all at the same time. Like by the time I got repeat customers, it was 2 years later and I was already out of the business and I had taken like, so I have empathized with that for you where you're like, you can never take off because you don't know what castings are coming through. And it's the worst part about castings half the time is it is like, hey, we want you to read for a thing. All right, cool. You got it. It starts tomorrow. You're like, fuck, I got to drop everything.
Yeah. And it's that gig mentality of like cobbling it together was also really stressing me out. Excuse me. There was like a lot of that. So I was like, I just need it. And a lot of my friends who were actors were not as successful, not that I'm so successful, but they weren't as successful as me, but I saw them like grinding it out so hard and loving it so much. And I was like, they would kill to be doing what I'm doing and I'm miserable. And I was like, that's not cool. So, but, and plus like, I loved playing music. I was in Bite Me Bambi's when I was doing at the tail end. And I remember going to all these meetings looking for a new agent. And they had all Googled me. And so they all tried to bring Scott up. Like, oh, I saw Fishbone. I love Squirrel Nut Zipper. Whatever. Like, they try to do it. And that was, like, cool. And then we'd be doing gigs and stuff. And it would be like, well, you can't play those shows. You can't go on tour. You have to do pilot season. Or you have to do this. Or you have to do that. And I just felt so much more fulfilled playing music that I was like, you know, I've considered going back to acting recently because now so much of it is like the auditions or videos, like all on tape, so you don't have to drive the hour. You know, I was driving to LA like 5 times a week, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours every time. That I'm like,
yeah, hey. That's a time commitment too. Like, I mean, honestly, if you don't have an agent, what you did, but if you don't have an agent and you're not union, finding the work alone, finding the auditions is a full-time job in itself.
Exactly. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But Bite Me Bambi's so busy right now, and I love doing that work that I'm super happy.
That's great. All right. I like that you're also leaving the door open. Like, here's my past. I don't want to do it. I've taken a break. But you did enjoy your time doing it, and it is something that may appeal to you again in the future.
Yeah, and I still kind of look like a kid, which is very useful. Someone recently was like, you still look like a child. You could come back. I'm like, oh, maybe. We'll see. I like listen to like podcasts where people discuss acting. I'm like, oh, I miss it. But then like I'm listening to Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died. And so much of what she says like resonates with me about like predatory adults in the industry and like just all this stuff that I just remember, it like comes back. I'm like, maybe I don't. I don't know. We'll see.
Not to go all HBO documentary on it, but I mean, some people like is that an experience you had? Because I was talking with an actress right around an actress from L.A. At a sci-fi convention that I was hosting at a couple years back, right around the Me Too movement. And I was asking her, I was like, what's your experience? She goes, like Harvey Weinstein, something like that has never happened to me. And she was saying, it's not because it doesn't happen. It's because I have the attitude and the personality where they're like, oh, she's not going to put up with my dick, pulling my dick out and jerking off bullshit. You know, she was like, I'm fortunate, but it has happened to a lot of people, unfortunately. So it was interesting to hear her perspective. And I should get her on the podcast, except, you know, it was fucking however many years ago. But it's interesting to hear that perspective. Somebody's like, oh, I know what goes on, but it's never happened to me. Is that similar? Did you have similar experiences, or were you lucky enough to skirt those incidents?
I think it's insane for how involved my parents were that I ran into stuff like that. Not often, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't not like people taking their dicks out or whatever, but like in theater, just like older, like me being a teenager and older guys saying things to me. I remember being harassed by this guy in a production of Oklahoma, and the guy got fired.
Of all the productions.
I know. There were actually two guys in that show who were doing it to me. The one guy got fired, and I remember for something else, I remember being like, oh, thank God he got fired. And I just told somebody what had happened to me like several times, and she goes, oh my God, honey, that's sexual harassment at work. Like, you have to tell somebody that. And I was like, huh? I'm like 14. I'm like, what? Oh, I didn't know. And so that kind of always stuck with me. But even like in auditions as a kid, like you need to show up in a bikini. Why does a 14-year-old need to show up in a bikini to a Knott's Berry Farm commercial audition? You know, there was like a lot of that I don't know what people's intentions really were with things like that. But there were times where I remember like telling my mom, like, I don't like this or whatever. And my mom was always like, well, then we don't got to go back. Like, we can tell them no, call your agent, you know, whatever. But like, my parents were so involved. I can only imagine where either the parents were like stage parents and pushing their kids and wanting it more than their kids, what they would have their kids do, you know, or if my parents were less involved, or I had a guardian or whatever. Like, and so, and I hear these experiences, like they really resonate with me. And I feel like I got lucky, like I said, that nobody ever like assaulted me like physically, but there was a lot of like, well, that's not even true. Some guy in a show, I had a hole in my costume. I'm 15. He's the lead guy. He's married. He's in his 40s and he's fucking putting his fingers in my dress. Like, there was that kind of shit all the time. Yeah. My ex was like, oh man, theater's full of pedophiles. He said that one time at a party we were at, and he's like, talk to my wife. This theater's full of pedophiles. I'm like, yeah, you ain't wrong. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's the entertainment industry. I don't know, but I had those experiences, and I was very well cared for and watched and, you know, whatever. So it's definitely strange. And it happens too, like in music, and it happens as an adult, and it happens, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
Do you feel like any of it's getting better from when you were younger to now? Like, we are putting these things out there and letting know that it happens. Women are speaking out. They're being, hopefully being more empowered, and hopefully still feeling like it's important to speak up. Does it feel like, I mean, at your age now, does it feel like maybe things are getting any less creepy?
I mean, I can't speak to like the acting industry because I'm not a part of it anymore. I would think so. I think like things like intimacy coordinators are great and stuff like that. And I think people are more aware. I think maybe before, where someone might turn a blind eye or not read too far into something, might read a little farther into it. Like, I know on-set teachers are a really great resource for that kind of thing and monitoring that. But I also think like power is really what drives that kind of stuff. Yeah. Is people who are in power, I can think in our music industry and in our genre, like, there's people in power who get away with a lot of stuff, and people are afraid to say anything, and that's shitty, you know? And but I get the power and money are really what drive that sort of stuff. So I think I hope people are a little more cognizant of it, and I think maybe people are protecting their kids a bit more, I would hope. But also, if you are a parent, and there's some parents out there who want it so badly for their children, they'll, like, do anything. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's tough. And just that kind of industry is hard on a kid's brain anyway. Like, when I see, like, the Amanda Bynes's of the world, I'm like, yeah, I was on those sets where kids are responsible for providing financially for their families because they moved the whole family there so that the kid could work. They are responsible for the jobs of 100 adults who work on this television show. And then they're the boss. So the adults have to kowtow to that. Like, and that's, like, really, like, bad for a kid's brain, you know? Or I even say it about the industry, like, playing music. Like, it's probably not healthy for people to tell me, like, I appreciate when they say kind things or, like, that was so great or you're so great or whatever, but it's probably bad for my brain to constantly be hearing things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, a weird, yeah. It's a weird industry. And I think you have to really be present in yourself and sure of yourself to kind of keep your head on straight. Sorry, that was, like, a weird tangent and very long.
No, it's perfectly. No, I get it because, so, my interview, one of the things I learned from interviewing was how to get people to open up and be comfortable, because that's what I want you to be. I want you to be comfortable. And I've developed the tactic of being, hey, I'm just like you. Works a lot more with comedians and probably musicians, but, you know, or like when I pitched you the podcast, it was, this is the reason why I saw your band is because my friends were opening up for you the next day. And I'm like, well, I'm going to support the people that are supporting my friends. So let me go see this.
That's so
and,
rad.
You know, and also the Slackers and Big D.
It was a good tour.
My friend had a ticket. It was, and my friend had an extra ticket. And it's like, this is a perfect storm of things. And when I was looking up your band at that same time, I was like, oh, she looks in acting and this and that and whatever. So, you know, like when I talk to other comedians, like through like PR people, as soon as they know that I'm also a comedian, they immediately relax. They know they're not just doing another interview where I'm like, all right, so I work for the local paper. What do you think about white guys being able to say the N-word in comedy? What do you think of Michael Richards? What do you think of is cancel culture? Like, they can know that we're going to have a real conversation with somebody who is also on their same level.
Yeah.
Same thing. I worked in the music industry for many years. So it's like, I want to approach you and be like, hey, I don't want you to have to get that vibe of, oh, is this a fan? Is this a fanatic, or is this weird? I want you to be like, hey, we're on the same level of things. So I want you to relax and trust me and have an open conversation. And I appreciate already you opening up about some of the things that, you know, a lot of people would steer away from or would make other people uncomfortable to talk about. But I, you know, that is the truth of, unfortunately, of the industry, and that's one of the things that I want to get to here. So I, not to fill your head more and make it bigger, but thank you for being comfortable and opening up about those things.
The older I get, like, that's what my manager does that listen to this. Like, yeah, the older I get, I'm like, it is what it is, you know, and I like to be honest with people, and interviews like this are fun because, like, sometimes, yeah, I just get, like, the same, like, five questions, and, you know, I get it. They got to get the thing they want to get across, but it's nice to just, like, have a chat, you know?
Yeah, but the, so what was the... What was the transition from acting to music for you? Was Bite Me Bambi, because you're in a band, you're in basically a supergroup. You're in a SoCal ska punk supergroup. You got guys from Suburban Legends. You got guys from Save Ferris and other bands. I mean, these are pretty big bands. How did you get into Bite Me Bambi? What was the walk in from, hi, I'm going to be your singer now?
So I was in another band called Karate in the Garage, and it was the first band I was ever in. I actually joined that band because acting used to be my fun thing, and it became work, and so I wanted another fun thing to do because I can never sit still. And so I was in that band, and we weren't that great, and we didn't know very much about being in a band, and, you know, whatever, fumbling through, but I met a lot of people in the ska scene because of it. Which was really cool. And so Bite Me Bambi was kind of around the time Brian Mashburn, who's no longer in the project, but he was for a very long time, and wrote a lot of the songs. He was in Save Ferris. His band was kind of wrapping up that he was in, and I was kind of wrapping up Karate in the Garage, and we were like, let's just write together. which is something I'd never done, where people are like, let's just write. I'm like, oh, okay. And then we were like, this is cool stuff we're writing. And he was never originally intended to be in the project, but I suckered him into doing it. Because I love working with him. So, yeah. So, and then we started just handpicking people, basically. The people we wanted to work with, we were lucky enough to be like, hey, like, Ryan Brown, like, I think you're a great bass player. Do you want to come be in this project? Like, Mike from My Superhero, like, we think you're great on keys. And, you know, you're a great, like, band business guy. Like, you're cool. You want to come? Like, so we sort of built the project that way. And then, yeah, we just kept writing, and it was interesting because we were able to, on our first, you know, show, like, be able to really come out and do, like, a really good performance. And I'd never been in a band that, you know, we kind of, I don't want to say we had to skip ahead because everybody put in a lot of time and energy before that point, but it was nice to kind of, you know, arrive and be able to do a good job and play with people who I really respected and everything. It was cool.
All right, so how does somebody build a band? Like, I could tell you, like, as a comedian and as a person who's written on TV shows and written jokes for radio, joke writing is a formula. You know, once you understand what the formula is, joke writing becomes easy for the most part. It's never easy. But there's still too many people that sit around and think that it has to be divine intervention. And I have to be struck by lightning in the brain by the gods and muses of comedy. And a lot of people think that same way with music, where music has to be, oh, it's this emotional feeling that I have to just be inspired by. When it's like, no, sit down, you pick a key and you pick a pattern and you subject. Like, I don't want to, like, say that it's easy to write a song, because it's not. But there is some structure to that. Is there a point where you learn that structure of writing? Because you just said, you're like, oh, I didn't know we could just get together and write. I didn't know that was a thing that people did.
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of romanticism around, like, songwriting. And I know people who are very, like, romantic about it and stuff. And that's cool. Yeah, I remember I started taking guitar lessons when I was 18, and I very quickly was like, I don't want to be a shredder. I told my teacher, I said, I want to know how to write songs, and I didn't know anything about music theory, and I still kind of know nothing about music theory, but I can get by. And so he kind of showed me, like, how to write a song, and so that's, I got really into, like, writing music and stuff. But then as I got older, I was like, wait, I'm not the best songwriter on the planet. But I know a lot of really great songwriters. And if they want to write with me, like, that's rad. So, you know, when does this come out?
Probably in 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, well, there's a song on this record that was written by somebody from a very famous ska band. and he was like, hey, I wrote this. Like, see if you like it. You can mix it up. You can switch it around if you want. And so it was cool. Like, we got to, as a band, collaborate on this, like, sort of skeleton somebody had helped, you know, had given us. And I used to think that there was something bad in that. And now I'm like, no, it's cool. And, like, I keep a lyric, like, note on my phone. I'm like, anytime an idea, like, normally they're not even lyrics, they're just ideas, I, like, write it down. It's unhinged. My favorite thing on Twitch is, like, to read it out loud sometimes, because, like, sometimes I'm drunk or whatever when I write this shit down. You're like, what the hell? But I'll go in there and I'll sort of be like, okay, like, what of these ideas could I expand on? And if I can get good lyrics going, you know, then it's like, okay. And sometimes it's melody first in my head, or as I'm writing the lyrics, I'm hearing the melody, and I need to show that to somebody. So it's kind of like all these different ways. But on these last couple songs, we've been, like, really collabing as a band, which is kind of new for us, but we're really enjoying it. And I think we're gonna come out with stronger music that's more interesting, because it's, you know, 6-7 people's perspectives versus just, like, me or Brian Mashburn just sitting there and being like, here it is, you know, everybody, or, you know, whatever. So it's cool.
That sounds exciting. I can't wait to hear that stuff. Because
you can hear, you know, it, like, in the background, right?
Yeah, I can hear some of it now.
Sorry.
I'm going to get a copyright violation for this podcast episode when I put it out. You guys, you're going to hit me with that DERRM. He's like, he's putting out our music on his podcast.
Cameron's like, it's going to be fine. Nobody can hear it. And I'm like, oh my God, you guys are so loud. I hear everything. You're going to love editing this. Ooh.
Well, here's the, like, I worked in music for a long time as a, you know, band manager. By that I mean I was the least irresponsible 20 something in the band.
Hey, that's a skill.
Shows. Yeah, it is. And then, so during the pandemic, I picked up a pandemic hobby of
the ukulele. Nice.
And I've been playing it very dedicatedly. In fact, technically, my day job is playing the ukulele now, which sounds absurd, and I'm going to explain that. It's that I am a comedic, historic tour guide of Boston, and my character is I am a punk rock ukuleleist.
I love that.
Who holds a world record for never selling any tickets.
Amazing.
So every day I play my ukulele in front of people, but if you ask me to go play at an open mic and play Damn It by Blink-182, my heart rate goes 130 beats per minute.
That's so funny.
There's an intention of one day of writing my own songs, hopefully comedic, maybe not comedic, who knows? So I don't, hearing that the songwriting process from somebody who's, you know, been through it and learning over the years of how to do it is interesting for me now, you know? So it's, I'm glad that you guys are finding new ways to collaborate and making your, enriching your musical experience.
Yeah, it's really fun, and working with other people who I respect has been fun. Yeah, like for so long, I don't know why, I thought it was like a weakness, like to not, you know, like, how do I say that? There are some people in music that I know don't write their own songs, but they will say they do. And I always think that's so weird, because everyone wants to be an auteur, I guess, and like the romanticism of it, but I'm like, yeah. I don't know, I'm not the best at everything. Or, you know, so-and-so over here is giving me a freaking kick-ass song. Well, I'm gonna be like, oh no, I'm not gonna, like, no, you know? Like, it's fun to, I learn something new every time I write with somebody else, and I, you know, I get that skill and I get to use that going forward, and it's fun. It's fun to hear other people's perspectives and stuff, and I don't know, I really enjoy it, and I don't see it as like a weakness anymore. And I think some of it too is like female musicians, I think, tend to feel that more if they don't play an instrument. I think there's sometimes that kind of thing. I've heard, you know, I don't want to say who, but I heard this person in an interview be like, they're like, how did you write that song? And she's like, they're like, because you don't play an instrument. She's like, it just came to me. And I was like, no, your brother wrote that song and everybody knows it. That probably just gave it away. But I'm just like, just say it. Just say it. Just say you wrote the lyrics and the melodies and like you got help. Like, it's okay. It's okay to need help or want help or enjoy the help. Like, it's okay. But I get it. It's hard as a girl in this, a woman in this industry sometimes. It's hard. There as many female-fronted ska bands as there are now, which is incredible. We're still, like, a small number of musicians, and there's still, like, a lot of, you know, just weirdness around it. Guys thinking you don't know how to use your gear or play your instrument. Whatever. Like, that still exists. Sexism in the industry, you know? So I get why people are like that.
Well, it's also easier for them to get away with saying, oh, this was divine inspiration, because nobody reads liner notes anyway, because nobody buys records.
Yeah, well, and also, like,
it's not written there. It's like, written by so-and-so.
You the truth
Spotify really, doesn't tell you the songwriter.
The truth really doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing I learned early on in interviews, too. Like, I could literally be lying to you right now, and it wouldn't matter, because if I tell the lie every time, it doesn't matter, which is, like, so...
The lie becomes the truth.
Yeah, like with the Beatles, right? Everyone's like, that shit probably never happened, but it's like, well... You know, sorry, the UPS truck drove away. That's why the lighting changed. But it's like...
This is how I know I'm talking to another entertainer. You apologize for a lighting change because a truck passed
by. I know. I'm like, ah, sorry. No, but yeah, like if you say the lie enough, it becomes the truth, like the lore or whatever. You know, like, I get it. It's...
Yeah.
In
the tourism world, when we were doing training for this, one of the things that we said was, if it's not true, it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
when it came to certain myths of, like, you know, historical myths and stuff like that, like, if this wasn't true, it should be.
Yeah, because sometimes the truth is boring.
Oh, George Washington didn't have wooden teeth. It should be true that he had wooden teeth.
Oh, instead of slave teeth, because that's what really happened, and that's fucking disgusting and horrible. Yeah. God, I wish it was wooden teeth and he wasn't a freaking slave owner asshole. God. Anyway, sorry.
Hey, look, you're talking to a guy who's currently a historic tour of this the first state to abolish slavery, but also the first one to legalize it. Yeah. So I fully understand the dichotomy of that.
Yeah.
I'd have to talk about it every day. I have to be like, positive, cheery Boston. Anyway, but so during your days of acting and during your days of as a musician, were there other jobs that you had? Day jobs that you had to have to support yourself?
Yes, I still have day jobs. Yeah, the one everybody thinks is funny is that I'm an accountant.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the that is the exact opposite of somebody who's supposed to be in a punk band is a person who did. All right, well, let's talk. How did you become an accountant? Because most people go to college for that.
Well, I'm an enrolled agent, so I do taxes. I represent people in audit before the IRS.
Oh, so you're not just like April's the big time. You're like, oh, they're going to take away my house. Please help me.
Well, luckily, I don't have to do a lot of that because I'm a very honest accountant. But yeah, I do taxes and I do all that jazz, which affords me the ability the other months of the year to tour and things like that. But yeah, I was doing bookkeeping. My family owns a landscaping business. So I did the bookkeeping for that. And I was like wanting to get out of acting. That was around the time I did it. And my mom's best friend did taxes. And she was like, if you learn to do taxes, like I can get you a job. And she did. And then we wanted to start our own company. And I took the enrolled agent exam not that long ago, actually during the pandemic. You have to pass the 3 tests for the IRS. I passed and got my certification and started our own practice. And we have a small but mighty tax practice. And some of my clients know about my music. A lot of them don't. I don't like what...
Does the band make you also do the bookkeeping for them?
Of course they do. I do
Look, if I was in a band with a tax accountant, I would probably say, hey, can you do our books? But also at the same time, it's like, you do this all day. We'll find somebody else to do it.
Well, I also have, like, somebody in my band who is, like, the vice president at a bank. So, like, he could do it, too. He just chooses not to. You know?
You're the one that's got to take the work home with
you. Yeah, I'm like, what the heck? No, ours always gets done, like, literally right before our partnership tax return is due. Like, it's like me, like, the day before. Like, oh, shit, I don't even remember where half this is. You know, plumbers have the leakiest pipes. But, yeah, so that's like, the funny thing that I don't love talking about it because I feel like it's kind of, like, boring or I don't like when...
Well, that's what this podcast is about.
I know.
During the day,
and that's why...
To support what we want to do at night.
That's why
and
I
honestly,
talk about it.
You're right. But... Accounting is boring as fuck. As someone who also loves math... I can understand why people think math is boring as fuck, but I was lucky enough to wake up, like fall asleep during class in high school, look at the board, finish all my work, teach everyone else how to do it, and still finish before everyone else.
Oh, that's good. So, I'm not even that good at math. I'm just detail oriented.
That's what I want to know.
I don't do very much math, actually. It's mostly...
Are you mathlete or OCD? Because I'm both, and it's a nightmare living with me.
It would depend. So some people would say, oh, she's great at math. Like, I went like all the way through calculus like in college and stuff, but... that's just because I have overachieving tendencies and an Asian dad. Like, I'm not great at math. It's not my favorite.
Tiger dad.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you know, my family's the kind of family you bring home a B. They're like, oh, I'm not mad, just disappointed. You know, like that kind of shit. So, but I didn't go to college to be an accountant. I have a screenwriting degree. It's like I paid all this money for it that I don't use and whatever. But, I say my parents paid all this money for my college education just for me to sing in a ska band. But.
Look, you make really fun music videos too. Don't sell yourself.
I don't do that though. Chris Grau does that.
Reading the writer notes of YouTube. No one's reading the YouTube
and
writer notes.
He didn't go to film school, so see, you don't need to do anything. But but a lot of my job is remembering the law, memorizing the law, remembering the law, knowing how to look up the law is really what my job is. So that I am good at. So remembering things, well, sometimes. But yeah, so that's a lot of what I do. And my cool clients will know and, you know, whatever, but and I also don't like to say it in the band life. Cause like then sometimes people send me like tax questions and like, I don't want to give them the tax, you know, or just like, I want to focus
on the Twitch stream is not about tax help.
Yeah, not quite. So I like to just sort of keep it separate. Cause some of my clients would like literally have a heart attack and die if they saw what I do. And some of them are cool though, and they like come to the shows, like they don't care.
I feel like the next iteration is the H&R Block Me Bambi.
Oh God, I hope not. They're the worst to work for. No, but sometimes when I post like an Instagram reel that starts in my bra when I'm like putting clothes on, I'm like, well, let's hope they don't find it, but they probably have. I don't know.
Well, that brings up another interesting thing that you were talking about your. Clients is do your clients are there clients that's like, oh, you're in a band, okay, nice, sure you are.
I get that all the time in my everyday life. People I meet, oh, you're in a band, that's cool, like my neighbors, and then they come to the show and they're like, oh no, you're like in a band. And Mike, our keyboard player, goes, yeah, we own our own instruments and everything. There is like a, when people think like, oh, you're in a band, they think one thing. And then it's like, when I'm like, oh, I'm going to be gone the whole month of November on tour, they're like, wait, what? I'm like, yeah, like we go and we play shows and like people show up, and which is a beautiful privilege that not everybody gets, you know? So, but yes, I think there is some of that, but then I have like cool clients. This isn't breaking any client privilege, but I have one client who used to work for like Capitol Records. He's cool as hell, you know, and he understands the industry. Like, you know, he's always asking me, oh, you play with these people? I know them. I remember them from back in the day, you know, stuff like that. So it's cool.
That's nice that there's at least that crossover, that what you can just like doing taxes. And he said, you're like, oh my God, dude, you just don't understand. Like, you finally.
Well, and I do a lot of musicians now, like my friends, like the word's gotten out. I do musicians. I do like Twitch streamers. Like I do that now too, cause I know, understand it more, you know, and stuff like that. But my original clientele was not that at all.
Well, with the Twitch streaming, since we brought it up and it's the most current thing you guys are doing, what was the A, impetus to being on Twitch as a band, and two, what are our Twitch streams like for people who have not seen it?
Well, we started in the pandemic because the aforementioned Chris Grau was like, hey, Scott Klopfenstein's having a lot of success on Twitch and I'm trying to get other people on there, and the person who's running the music outreach on Twitch likes punk and ska, so like they'll help you. Like, okay. So we didn't know what we were doing. Chris came and helped us set it all up, bless him. You have to learn an entire new lingo on Twitch. There's things like bits and subs and, you know, mods, and I had to learn all that. I'd never seen
follow and subscribe, which are different things on the same platform.
I had never seen a Twitch stream. I don't game. I didn't know anything about it. I literally was like, where people play video games? But our Twitch streams now, we do like two different types. One is like this morning I did it. I get on, I sing requests, we chat. There's like a lot of just like talking about our lives, or I'll ask everybody, like my favorite segment is food talk. Like, what's the best thing you ate this week? Cause I am a foodie and love talking about food. What TV shows are you watching? And everybody chimes in, you can chat, you know, we're chatting with each other. And then on like Sundays, our sax player comes on and we just literally just like shoot the shit. Let's talk about stuff that's going on in our lives and what's going on with the band and stuff. And it's really fun, and we've grown a really cool community of people that like, it's translated to the real world. So like, we'll have meetups before our shows of like Twitch, you know, we call them Bambinos, our Twitch subs, but like, you know, we'll hang out, or like, you know, when we play our big show in California, our big headliner every year, like people come early and we go to a baseball game together, or we go to a burlesque show together, like just like hang out. And then to me, the coolest part is like, one of our subs, father passed away suddenly, and other subs drove hours to go to the funeral to be with him. Like, that's incredible. Like, if my stupid ska music can get real life friends and connections with people like that, like, that's amazing. And like this morning, everyone's talking about the hard time they're going through, and I'm like, don't worry, we're going through it together. Like, I've been having a bout of depression lately. Like, you know, it's okay to talk about that stuff and to like be there for each other. And I think that's so cool. We have a Discord too, where everybody chats and like, hey, I'm at this show in Boston. Like, we have fans who are like, oh, we're going to the show in Boston, the Dolly Rots. And like, they're all going to meet up and go together. Like, that's so cool, you know, to get real life friendships through me singing requests online, you know, but we have a really good time.
That's a lovely sentiment to hear about, because a lot of fan groups become, you know, friends with each other through like Reddit groups or, you know, other online fan communities. And usually the artist is never involved. They're all there because they're friends of the artist. But now these people are becoming friends with you because you guys gave a platform for yourselves to talk back to your fans.
Yeah.
And people who listen to this podcast regularly will know I talk about this still to this day, of the pandemic friends who I've been having on the podcast over the years. And it's like people I met through doing Zoom comedy.
Yeah.
And doing Google Hangout comedy and doing comedy on YouTube and Instagrams and doing all this socially distanced remote comedy and podcasts. And I'm still to this day having people on that I was like, hey, look, we're meeting in person for the first time after all these years. And there is a weird bond between me and these other comedians that just did these Zoom shows. It's like, I don't want to put anybody's life experiences down, but it's like, sometimes we felt like we went through something together. And even though we didn't meet each other in person until like 4 years later or 3 years later, we know each other better than I know people I've known for the 13 years I've been in Boston comedy, or the 15 years I've been in comedy and people I've known off and on for 15 years. These people that I did Zoom shows with, we have a so much stronger connection. And it sounds like that's the kind of community that you guys are building on your Discord and your Twitch.
Yeah, it's rad. I always joke that our mod on our Twitch stream, his handle's Disciple of Homer. I won't dox him, but I always joke that he's my first like internet friend I ever made, that like I met in real life and like we're friends.
That's because you were too young for AOL Instant Messenger.
No, hey, I had an AIM, but like
AOL chat rooms.
You know, just to be like, oh, I met you online. I don't know you. I work with you on this Twitch stream and now we met in real life. And like Homer comes to a bunch of our shows. I love that guy. You know, it's like, it's cool. It's nice.
That's awesome. All right. So when is the new EP going to be out?
That's the question everybody wants to know.
Yeah, right.
I'd say.
I did the great interviewer technique of, all right, time to plug things.
It will be before the end of the year.
Well, knowing that you're going to be, well, we're gonna be like, we don't have a date.
It will be before the end of the year. We're finishing it now. We've got a couple special guests on this record that we got to get to record and then. We'll be putting it out, but there's music videos already made for some of the songs that we're going to be releasing more content. It's just trying to get all the ducks in a row. But until then, here, look at me circling around. Just join our Twitch streams, twitch.tv/bitemebambi. I'm there twice a week, sometimes three times a week. We have a good time. Join our Discord. That's the best way to like really get the updates without the algorithm getting in the way. Or you can follow us on Instagram @bitemebambi. Always on there. So yeah. A lot of cool
and
stuff.
And then where can they find you specifically on the social medias?
Instagram @BiteMeBambi. My personal is @this.is.talena, T-A-H-L-E-N-A. I actually am probably more active there than the BiteMeBambi one is. yeah, TikToks are the same. Facebook, facebook.com/BMB ska band, or you can go to our website, BiteMeBambi.com. It's got our merch store. It's got all of our information, all of our shows that are coming up. We've got a couple shows and a lot of tour announcements coming throughout the end of the year, so that's where you can find all the good stuff.
And last thing, because I rarely have musicians on, let's try this one. This is I'm sorry surprising you with this question,
it's
but
okay.
one unknown, undiscovered band that you want to promote right now for the listeners, that somebody you've toured with or somebody that you're a fan of.
Unknown or undiscovered, I wouldn't say that, but a band I'm a really big fan of, and they have more fans than we do these days, but is the McCharmleys. They're local here in like Santa Ana. They're super cool. They played our show. They're like a rock and roll soul band. Angie, the lead singer, is an incredible songwriter and musician. They're really fun, and everybody I know who I show them to loves them, so I would check them out for sure.
Perfect. They have slowly popped up a couple times in my Spotify For You playlist, so
you're welcome.
I'm glad you've already recommended somebody that I already was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I should remember what these people
they're
are.
They're really great. And Angie's like a rock star. I love her. So yeah, definitely check out the McCharmleys. I'm trying to think if there's like a ska one, but everybody knows all the ska.
All right, this will be the last one. Do we think, real quick, wrap up question. Do you think we're in a ska revival? Are we heading for a fourth wave?
Everybody.
Or is it just my algorithms finally speaking to me?
My dad asked me that question the other day. He's like, do I just see so much ska because of my algorithm? I don't know. I feel like with the internet, it's easy for subcultures to find each other. And it's, you know, I know about more ska bands across the world than I ever have before. And I think that's cool. I think we have to look at the measure of success. What is a fourth wave? What is ska being popular? I mean, is ska going to be Taylor Swift? No. You know, but is ska finding an audience maybe online that it didn't have previously? I could see that, you know, and there's a lot of cool ska shows going on and great new ska bands. And what I love about the scene is we always support the newer bands, you know, bands like, you know, Cat Bite and Bite Me Bambi. Like when we started, you know, there was support. The people were excited to see a new band. Like, that's cool. I know in other scenes that doesn't happen all the time, and then your scene will die. So I think I know everybody got excited when the Interrupters got on the radio, but I don't know if like we're all gonna get on the radio. But a lot of I will say this: when I tell people I'm in a ska band, they either say one of two things. One, what is ska? Or two, oh yeah, that's like making a comeback, huh? So if the general public maybe thinks that, maybe there's something to that. But, you know, I will always play ska, reggae, you know, punk, like that's me. So I love making that music, no matter if 100,000 people listen or no one listens. Like, it's what I like to do. So for me, that's what I try to focus on.
Somebody once said that people who are into ska are just punks who are friendly.
I always say, go to a ska band alone, leave with 10 friends.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this is great having you. I'm glad we are able to schedule this and get this in. I'm glad I got to hear the parts of the new record before
I know I
got to
go record the scratch vocals so we can do the
go
track.
Go do your scratch vocals. All right. I'll talk to you
all
soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Hi.